session number 11038, reel 7.
Mr. Bill Towers, reel 7. You described a typical day when you were at the wagon lines. You were on the gun lines when it was your turn,
yes,
wasn't you?
Yes.
Could you describe a typical day in the same way from when you got up on the gun lines, on, say, a quiet day when there wasn't much action? You slept in these dugouts you described before. What time would you get up on the gun line?
Well, it varied. About 6 in the morning. Then we'd go on our breakfast. From breakfast we'd go...
Would that be the same kind of breakfast as you got at the wagon line?
It'd be somewhere at the back, in a holler somewhere, and just a fire, and it'd cook it on there for him. You'd sit about and eat it, or bring it back to the gunpit and eat it.
And same ingredients?
Same ingredients, a bit of pork, a bit of bacon and that.
And after breakfast, what would happen then?
After breakfast, wash, shave and brush up. And then... you'd start tidying the gun pit up.
What sort of things would you be particularly bothered about tidying?
Well, anything we'd made untidy, shell cases or like that, clear them out, take them away and put them on a dump. If we'd been found during the night, there'd be shell cases there, and we took all them away. And then we'd bring some ammunition, go and fill up with ammunition what we wanted. And then when it got all filled up, the officer in charge, the chap that's observing, he knows the ranges of different shells. And he'd give us, we'd have to set so many fuses ready for when they want to fire, and had them set there ready, so that we wouldn't have to do it when the action started. And so many would be doing shells. Two of them would be cleaning the gun.
How would you go about cleaning the gun?
Greasy rags down, washing it outside. But we had a pull-through. It's on a cord, a wire brush. And push it through, and then one at one hand and scrub it like that. And then put a woolen one folded on to polish it. And there's so many doing that. Each had their own jobs. And that was it. Carrying shells, there's all a lot of you on carrying them. But when you got all the pigeonholes full of shells, the different types, we set those particular fuses to what were required, so that when we had to fire, he knew we were all ready.
And that you did that all morning?
Every morning. Not all morning, so long, and then I generally clear up and do everything. And then it was... knock about, freedom then.
But what would you do during your periods of freedom, when you were in the gun pit?
Oh, well, some used to get down and write letters home or something like that. And if you had a chance, you cleaned yourself then. And if it was possible, you'd strip off and have a bath with a bucket of water.
You talk to each other a lot?
Oh, yes, we talked.
What sort of topics?
Oh, God, all that was come up, I think. It was just general topic. Anything had happened during the night or all like that.
Would you talk about the war much?
No, I don't think so. Never. Well, you never talked, because you only knew what that part where you was, because it was funny, like you was in action here, and you... the line, somebody back further over there, would be our line, it's just the same. But we didn't know what was taking place over there. We only knew what took place here. And the funny thing is, there used to be what they call a Daily Mail, Continental Daily Mail. And some chaps used to come up with some stuff. Anybody come to bring one, and it got handed round. And you could learn more about the war from that than we knew. And I remember being in Poppering, I told you before about this air, but I didn't know about it till I read it in paper. It was elaborate when I read it in paper. We didn't think anything about it.
So this is how you'd spend the morning?
Morning.
Then you'd have a dinner?
Yes.
Would it be, again, a hot dinner?
Yes, something like that. Corned beef stew or all like that, if there's any meat.
So not much, no worse or better than you had in the wagon line?
No, just same routine all the time.
What about in the afternoon? What would you
do? Well, any general roundabout, if there were any places roundabout the gun pit and the officer's mess and all them things, so many would be detailed to go do that. Everything had to be cleaned up and tidied. There was always a job for you to
and
do.
And that was done on a daily basis?
Daily basis, yeah. Mm.
So you get a tea, would you?
Yes.
Is that again the same?
Yes.
And then what about the evening?
Nothing. Nothing. Then. Well, you just stood too used to ready, just in action. Sucking your thumb, that's about
it. It sounds in a way as if it was almost more boring. Or
it
less.
Was boring at times. When you wasn't firing, it was boring. But we used to sing.
What would you sing?
Sing all sorts. If a lad had been home on leave, I don't know if you remember, there used to be a paper called News of the World, and it had a half sheet of the latest tune. And if one lad would get to know it, he'd come back and he'd whistle it, and we'd all get to know it, and we'd sing it and sing it and sing it. And I also remember when I come on leave, there was one when you were sweet 16, and I learnt it, and I could sing it, and then I was singing it, and they're all picking up to me. Used to sing it regular, and that's how he went on. And,
do you remember any of the other songs you sang?
Oh, no.
Were they more sentimental songs?
Sentimental, there were no pops, you know.
Did you make up any sort of cynical songs about the war?
Oh, well, yes. Oh, God, God bless the Sergeant Major.
Do you remember any of them?
Oh, I just forget now. God bless the Sergeant Major and his blooming lot. Oh, I forget it. I'm sorry.
But you did sing that more cynical sort.
Oh, yes. Oh, we sang all sorts.
Would people in the battery make up their own words to songs?
Yes, they did. We got some real real stuff as well. I can't remember them.
Were any of them rude?
Very rude. Sergeant Majors and that. Bless all the sergeants and their sinking mess. And all like that. Oh, God, it was hilarious. I wish I knew them now. Can't think of them.
Now, you mentioned that the only time you fired the gun was when you were on guard. Now, being on guard? Could you explain it?
One man would be guarding two guns, you know. They were separated, one here and one over there. And all four were a distance apart. There was a right section, that was A and B, and left section C and D. They'd have a guard there. He'd be walking backwards and forwards in dark, slow arms, and I'd be up here.
Walking. So the men would be in the dugout
asleep?
Or they're
in their sleep. Now,
so was this only at night time?
Night time, yeah. And when they were on this here Morse code thing, it was a line that had run out on the ground, and there was a signaller down with the observation post, and they had a dugout here with it in. And he was on duty all night, and he'd come and shout, action. We shouted action, and we first gun you there, that was loaded, ready. That was to waken everybody up. Then they all rushed and got to his position, and got the orders, and it was, bang, 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 bang.
And that was the only time you got to fire it?
Yes, that's it. I was then, after that, I was a labourer on shells.
Did they never, I mean, when you were firing a lot, and it was fairly tiring, wouldn't you take it in turns?
No, that man had that job, he said. And sometimes it was an NCO that sat there doing tired.
What about when they were on leave? It'd be another Bramley man, would it?
Yes, oh yes. Oh yes. We still had that job, me, that job in that sub, doing fuses and whatnot.
And if you weren't on, how long would you be on guard for at a time?
4 hours on and two off. Or two on and four off. Two on and four off, that was it.
And how?
Went on at 8 till 10, then you came off. For another 4 hours, and that was the worst going on next, because you'd fallen asleep in dugout, and you're waking up to go out, and you're tired out.
How often a week would you be on guard?
About once a week.
So it wasn't too bad?
No, it wasn't
Other
too
than
bad.
That, you'd sleep in the dugout?
Yes, sleep in the dugout. There are always some action during the night. So you were lucky if you got a full night's sleep. No. There was always something, if you were only just a one or two shells to know that, let them know we were still about. And they wanted, that was the army, keep you alert.
Now, another thing I wanted to ask you, you mentioned it about the wagon line as well, was when you'd make a move. Yeah. What would happen when you when it was decided to move the battery? Can you describe how it was organised?
Well, a party would be at the wagon lounge. You'd pick any thing you had built up, dismantle it, and load it onto wagons. If it was something you wanted somewhere else, you'd load it onto a wagon. And generally load all stores up. The quartermaster store, he had to be loaded up in the two GS wagons. And all forage had to be loaded onto another wagon for horses, trusses of hay, all there was. Because you wouldn't go draw the rations that day. It was only what you had left. And then when you were going on, you call at some depot and get it there. And that was generally packing up. And then the gun team, with the gun limber, gun limbers and that, would go up the line when it was convenient. And sometimes they didn't fetch the guns out. Sometimes the next battery came in, we took their guns and left them ours in gun pit, instead of dismantling gun pit. You see, because they found out it was stupid. Every time you move, dismantle gun pit to get them guns out and put exact same gun in and build it up again. So they started that, changing the gunners and leaving the gun in. But if it had been used a lot, they had to bring it out to be cleaned out, fitted up and that. They had different cycles of it, you know, it wasn't always the same.
Now, what was it like on a march?
March, it was stupid. You'd all get your bandoliers on it, everything on the kit, and then all get mounted right up, officers all then mounted, all NCs on the mount. The gunners will march, so we had to flog it at the back of the gun, you know. The result is we're all looking out there. Two at one at getting at one at seats, it was suspended. Another on gun barrel like that, watching out. When he saw NCO come, we all dismount, we're walking. Again. But, and the only time some drivers would say they were tired out, anybody like a ride, you know? And that's it, you got a chance. You went and had a go then, but nobody saw it. NCO knew it would change. They didn't say anything.
Was the marching tiring?
It was for gunners. And it was boring for drivers, just sat there, you know, because all the horses followed one another, you hadn't to steer them or not like that. No. The only snag was, if you passed a place, I was riding a horse, and I went up a lane, and reins were dropping with that, and I was talking to some, and a horse turned into a field, and I said, come on, what's up, and they wanted to go. Then we found out we'd been there about 6 months before, and that horse knew when I didn't. It's funny that he knew, but it turned in that gateway. It knew. The horses knew if you took them to water, down to a river, and then they were strapping, and you cut them loose, they'd all go to that spot. You go there and find them. It's funny that they knew more about places than we did.
You mentioned when you went on leave. Did you get much leave?
Once, only got one leave.
What do you remember about your leave?
Well, first thing I wanted was a right good bath and burn my clothes, shirt and pants, that. Burned them.
Because of the lice?
Yes, and I burnt them and all the others and scrubbed the others, had them scrubbed and all that and disinfected because I wouldn't take them in their home. And that was the first job I had. I wanted a right good hot bath. That. And that's what I did, and cleaned up, and bought khaki shirt. I wasn't supposed to wear khaki, it was a flannel shirt. So I bought khaki shirts when I went home. And
what did your family say when you got back?
Oh, they were thrilled, and the trouble was, I landed in London, and the what marched us, there was a lady there, some lady there, and called her, anybody who'd like to go to the Paycor? So I wouldn't. It says, which, utterly, oh, stand there. And then they put us all in his own groups. And the march is off to Paycor. I don't think I couldn't have it. I didn't nothing in credit, so I went on leave without any money. And then they took us back to the station. I also remember I got into Leeds about 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was, where I live, was about 3 or 4 miles away. I thought, oh my God, am I to walk all that way? And now, and clean up and that. And that. So anyway, I set off and walked, knocked on the door and opened me. Who's that? I said, it's me, Willie. God, I flew around, down, mother and sister and that. So that was it. Nobody had any more sleep that morning.
Did you tell them about the war, about what it was like?
Well, we just didn't tell them much. We was told not to tell people about it.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. The Secret Service, you know. No. There was all hush, but we did tell them different things.
What sort of things?
Used to tell them the rough things, some out of the... I never did. I always told them, if I had any hilarious things, I always told them that.
Why didn't you tell them the nasty things?
I don't know, because we didn't want boring them that. But we wanted to forget it, everything. We were enjoying ourselves.
What did you do to enjoy yourself?
I found out it wasn't as enjoyable as I thought it was, because all my friends had gone. You see, there was nobody there. I was having to go about with old people. Like uncles and my father and uncles spent my time with that. So, and all the people I knew, I never saw anybody hardly once that I knew while I was on leave. None of my old friends or people I knew, young ones, but they seemed to be all the old ones.
How did they treat you?
They all treat you very well. All wanted to treat you to a drink and all like that, which I didn't want.
Do you still not drink much then?
No, I never drink much now. I used to drink it. I liked a pint of beer now and again. When it was beer, I don't like this cake stuff. I went off it when they started this cake stuff, tins. Couldn't stand that gassy stuff. I drink more brandy than else now.
So, anything else you remember about your leave?
No, well,
was it, by the way? Do you remember?
Late 1916, I think it was. And there was two more chaps from our battery, Bramley fellas, come on leave at the same time, and said, look, don't come back same right day. Have an extra day. I said, will it be all right? She said, yes, we're all together. I said, right. I did. Stopped an extra day. They didn't. So I got into trouble. I said I'd missed my train. And it got away, it didn't cause any trouble. But I got the extra day, but they didn't. So that was it. I dreaded going back for the sea. I was sick as a dog coming. So I told my father, he says, look, he took me into a pub and we got several rooms apiece and I had a few rooms. But then I got on the train, it worked off before I got to the boat. But oh, I was sick as a dog going over. I hated sea. And that was it. And then I said, oh, I'll never ask for another leave as long as I'm here. And anyway, I managed to get back all right.
After you'd been out there a fair while, did you start to get more nervous or stressed?
Definitely. When we were young, when we first went out, we were adventurous, going to look for trouble. And it grew on you. You were always on the alert and wanting to, if you could dodge it and get in anyway, you'd be out of it. You were always keeping undercover and always on the alert. But when he was younger, didn't bother you.
So you didn't feel guilty about trying to dodge out of
it? Oh, no, everybody did it. They were working, wanting... When you had to go from here to there, from an open space, you either did it at a double. Before, when you were young, you just walked and didn't you hang? But by God, later on you got to scarper right quick and get undercover.
What made you more nervous, do you think?
I think with airing it and getting, as it grew on, you know, getting shelled and all like that.
Did it give you nightmares or anything like that?
No. I don't think there's no nightmares because you're all still gone tired. When you got your head down, you went to sleep and you're out to the world. If you could get asleep, like. Because there's always somebody strapping round about.
What about your health? You said you were never ill.
Never ill. No. Never saw a doctor once. Only with my ears.
And it was
pains in my ear. when it was banging it.
That was early on. Wasn't
yes,
it?
And then it got started stuffing his ears. That's it. And that was the only time I saw a doctor.
What about the conditions and the weather? How did that affect your life?
Well, I don't know. It didn't bother us really because in sunshine we were like, I loved it because we were stripped off to the waist and sunshine, but in cold weather, it seemed to be colder there than here. And you slip out some nights and they give you a balaclava helmet to put over, wool, and you're waking up on the morning, the icicles hung down from where you're breathing and that. You broke them off, took it off, and then it was, up till in the morning, when he woke up and took that off, it was terrible, so to stop wearing the damn things, you were worse next morning. You felt cold more.
Any other ways you tried to keep warm?
No, I don't think we felt it much. I didn't. We're always working on that.
What about the ground conditions?
Oh, they were terrible. Especially wagon lines, up to the knees in mud. And we could tried to keep it clean. We never didn't walk in one groove all the time. We spread about. But it got to sometimes you went to a place where you're walking on duck boards. They're like two posts with lats across and that, and they're on the mud. And they'd walked on them. If you slipped off, you're up to the knees in mud.
Where was the worst place for mud, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. It was very bad on the Somme, but it dried up because it was chalky there. White chalk is a places. When the one part of it meant like being cut out then, it was all white, like white cliffs of Dover, chalk.
What about at Ypres? What was it like?
Ypres, that was a disastrous place. But when we're on outside of Ypres, and that was mud, and it depend on the time of the day you was, that was there, and mud, and we went there and got cobblestones, I think I told you, cobblestones.
You told us, yeah.
Made it for the horses to stand, didn't matter about us, as long as they were all right.
Now, what proportion of your time were you in the wagon line, and what proportion of the gun line?
Oh, God, I couldn't imagine that, I don't know, I couldn't. It varied, I don't know, you didn't know, because there was no regular time that said, you there.
But no. You were mostly at the wagon line. You were more often at the wagon lines,
yes. Mm. But
you still spent quite a lot of time at the gun line. If
yes. Mm. Mm. But you never had any special time. They hadn't a time limit, a schedule or all like that.
Now, what's the next big thing you remember? We've gone through... I understand that you don't remember places and dates too well.
No.
What's the next big thing you remember?
Well, I remember going to a place called Kemmelil, and it was up at hillside, this Kemmelil, and they made a road part of the way down up for all their traffic to go up, so Jerry's couldn't see them at the back of this hill. And we went there one night, pitch black, and we didn't take the guns, we just went up as a gun team and changed over from them. And now I want to go to the toilet. Oh, my God, I must find somewhere. And there's nowhere to go. So I walked out, and it was in moonlight. And I went down where the dog could do business. Nobody be out. There was nobody about. And next day I thought, I wonder when I looked. I thought, oh, my God, if I'd have gone another yard or two, I'd have been down that hole there. Great big dip, and that anyway. And then the next day we were there, we tied it up, and I don't know what we're doing. I was just on this roadside, and an ammunition train coming up. That's a mule team with pack saddles on, and I stood there watching them pass. I thought, poor lad, they're going right up to infantry line with them mules. And one lad, he looked at me and I said, God, I said, Sam Laycock. He said, Bill Towers, I said, yeah. And we were school pals. And we met there and I walked home with him so far. And then I didn't go any further, I had to come back again. I never saw him anymore till I came out of the army. And he went up there. That was his job, going up there, and he never got a scratch. I met him. So that was one thing I remember.
Do you remember anything else about Kemmel Hill?
came a little. We didn't stop long. It was only a few weeks. And then we went, I think it was, we came out and went somewhere else, and I don't know where it was. I think it was for Passchendaele, and we were going up. This is where it was on wagon lines. That wagon, all of us were down there.
What, the whole?
The whole battery. And they, as I told you, I was detailed. I'd come down that night. Somebody, a cop, another bombardier had come out from base somewhere. And he said, what they call you? I told him. He says, picket tonight. That we're looking after all. He says, but I've just come down. I says, that's but I say you're on picket. And that's it. Thank you. So that was it.
What did you have to do on picket? We missed that.
Looking after the horses. Riding around the horses.
During
the night? Seeing they're all tied up and everything. If one got loose, they could undo knots, cut some of them. And they're a crafty, undo knots. Someone then would put a shackle on the back leg so they'd be turned around there. Anyway, that was a duty. And while we was on duty, some horse A battery was in the further on the north, and all was a stampede of horses galloping back, and we looked, someone with their stomachs hanging out and all that. And we went and helped them, rounded them up and helped them. And they said they'd been up trying to get ammunition up during the night. So that was A battery. So I said, thank God we wasn't on that. And this signaller was always with me. He was on with me picking. And we're talking. And when daylight came, we got these horses that were all loose. We collected them up without riders and that. Anyway, while we were doing it all, and I mean, we'd had his breakfast and that and clearing up, our signaller came down or something. I said, what's happened? What are you down for? He says, hey, battery's got slaughtered during night. He says, and we've to go up during day. I said, what, we've to go in during day? He says, yes. He said, I've just come down with orders. Anyway, I said to Jack, I said, thank God, we won't be going. We're on picket, so we can't go. But by God, this corporal come, he says, you take so-and-so's horses, and you take so-and-so's horses. You're on parade at some hour, I don't know, he told us. And I had to take these horses and go up again.
Now, you were taking the horses up to do what?
To get try and get some ammunition through to the guns.
Was this your battery's guns?
Yes, I. And you know what Salisbury Plain's like, a big open place? It was like that. And there's a ring of observation balloons, Germans, connected to batteries, and they're watching for anybody that came through. And
carry on.
Every time we tried to go through, they started strapping. Of course, we all turned around and galloped back. And then we reformed again. And this particular sergeant, Sergeant Emsley, this one I had met in the canteen that told me to do washing steps, he said to me, he said, look, Towers, he says, I want you to come up front about 5 or 6 yards behind me. And when I give signal to gallop, we gallop, and they'll follow you. That's right.
How many wagons were there?
There were no wagons, just horses with these pack things. Just horses.
And how many horses did you have?
Oh, about 20 or 30, I think.
And so each one of you was leading another
two,
one?
Two, yeah. Each one had driver had two horses.
So there were 15 of you,
yeah.
About?
There's this pack thing that you used to put around his shoulder, fit round the horse. And you put 8 shells in that one, 4 at either side, and 4 at either side of that.
So the first few times you tried it, you were shelled away and you just came back.
Yes.
And now you were told to try and gallop.
Yes,
yeah. You were following the sergeant, weren't
yes.
you?
Yes, the sergeant went off. He says, follow me, give me 5 yards.
Did he have a horse with him?
Yes, just his own horse. He hadn't a lead horse. He was just his own horse. And he gave me the signal, and I shouted, gallop, like that, and I was set off. And they dropped a shell right between two of us, and that was it. And there was all when I remember going up in air and landing on floor, my legs stiff out. Never saw a horse, never looked for horses, and there was a shell hole, and I rolled down that out road, stopped there. And then the RMC man came, two of them, I thought, when I looked up over at Shell Hole Top, not a soul about it. Oh, God, I would have been left here. Other houses had scampered.
Were you in pain?
No, numb, actually.
Did you realise you'd been seriously wounded?
Yes, I could see it. My leg was stiff. And I'd been riding a horse and shrapnel had gone right in the kneecap. But you were looking to see if there's anybody to help you. And all of a sudden, these two men appeared from nowhere. And he come, he said, "Now, what's up?" And I showed him, he got a bottle of iodine and he tamed it in the hole. Oh, God, the pain was terrific.